CBSI on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague, Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution. He's a senior fellow. He teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. And recently, in an article in the Wall Street Journal editorial pages, Richard and his colleague Max Raskin inform us, educate us, as to the differences between the judiciary in the United States under the Constitution of the 18th century and the way the judiciary is chosen and administers its offices in the state of Israel. This is politics as well as judges and their futures. However, what I understand in general is that the standard in this country was established in Marbury versus Madison at the beginning of the 19th century. Wrote the John Marshall, the Chief Justice, it is emphatically the province and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is and not what the law ought to be. How is it different in Israel, both the choice and the administration, Richard?
Okay, well, let's just start with the beginning. John Marshall wrote this, the United States had a written constitution. And there was always the question of exactly how you read its provisions. And the key element is if you read this particular constitution in a ways in which you would like things to be done, there are going to be many people with many different views on this. And the whole document will start to fall apart one way or another because there'll be inconsistent interpretations and no authoritative way to stop it. So if you believe in the rule of law, essentially what you have to do is to believe in the presumptive clarity of language. Now, this is not an absolute presumption. If you look at the American Constitution, there are large numbers of implied provisions in there. But they're implied not from sort of the preferences of the judges one way or another, but because there's a long history and tradition of how it is that you read various kinds of clauses. So to give you the most conspicuous example of this, every time you give somebody a right, there's always the question as to whether or not it can be abridged. So I have the right to speak, and that's protected under the First Amendment. So now I have the right to defame you, and I now have the right to defraud you. I now have the right to impose a monopoly upon you. I now have the right to assault you with threats of get your person. Well, nobody believes that. And so what happens is with respect to every one of these guarantees, there is an appeal to general political theory. And what that political theory says is you get a constitutional right. You cannot use it as an agent to commit various kinds of standard harms. Force, fraud, monopoly, and so forth are all things that are regarded as illegal in every known legal system. And so, therefore, when you read the Constitution, you import the ability of the government to impose rational and reasonably proportionate matters to deal with these issues. Now, in Israel, it's a very different situation. They don't have a written Constitution at all. And in fact, they have no design in their original Supreme Court to deal with constitutional issues. So to put the thing back in perspective, Israel essentially was a democracy, and it had to figure out how to put a Supreme Court in place. The Israeli Supreme Court, when put into place in the 1950s and so forth, was just an appellate court that was designed to correct errors with respect to statutes. It had no constitutional functions whatsoever. And indeed, Israel did not have a constitution for it to do. So what they did in this relatively non-political situation is they created a rather unique way in which to appoint justices to the Supreme Court and judges to every other court. They could not possibly use the American system in which a president proposes a name and then it is confirmed or rejected by the Senate. Because Israel has a parliamentary system in which the prime minister is one of the members of parliament, if not separate branches, so the American system can't work. So what they did is they created an independent body of 9 members, and 3 of these members turned out to be justices of the Israeli Supreme Court. And the system worked along just fine until somewhere in the 1980s and 1990s, a very powerful judge named Yaron Barak transformed the Israeli constitution by judicial initiative. And he took some statutes that were basically enacted and said, under this particular statutory situation, we have the power to strike down any law which we think to be unreasonable, and nobody else can counterweight our judgment. And the argument is we know exactly what is or is not reasonable, and so therefore you have to trust us. What they do then is they take over huge portions of the economy in terms of the way in which they go. They are not subject to any of the doctrines which are read into the American Constitution. There's a doctrine for the United States about standing saying only people who have a tangible stake in an issue are allowed to sue. In Israel, anybody can sue about anything. In the American system, there's a rule which says if a case comes too soon, it will be unripe and we're not going to hear it until it's more fleshed out. The Israelis have no such constraint. Most importantly, the American Constitution says there are certain political questions that are consigned to the executive and to the legislative branch, and we don't touch those. But under the Israeli system, what happens is political questions can be, in fact, overseen by the court, which can intervene and override what happens to the political branches. The most conspicuous version of this is that the Israeli Supreme Court has said, we can determine that people who have committed certain kinds of crimes are not fit to hold public office as ministers. And we're therefore going to tell the executive branch that they cannot put them in there, so that there's a veto check over elected officials. Now, this has led to many controversial doctrines, some in commercial law, some in public law, and so forth. And the Netanyahu government came into place and put forward a series of reforms. And the reaction to it was absolutely crazy. What everybody says, if you change a single note of anything that we put together, the entire Israeli economy is going to fall apart. Foreign investment will start to flee. Free speech rights will be taken and so forth. And yet in most of these statements, there's no recognition of the fact that the Israeli Supreme Court is a complete outlier. Far from that, what is said is, you know, in order to preserve a democracy, we have to keep this court exactly the way it is. The irony is that the definition of democracy in the Israeli sense is the judicial branch is self-contained and the Supreme Court justices, the three of them, can veto any future Supreme Court appointee because under the rules of the Israeli situation, it turns out you have 9 members on the committee, some from the legislature, some public, and the 3 judges. You need to get 7 to appoint the Supreme Court justice. Well, who do you get on that committee? They always vote as a bloc, except in rare, rare circumstances. So the chief judge of the 15 people there, essentially 15 judges there, picks 2 of his cronies. And what they do is they can veto any future Supreme Court appointee. And you have to be able to open this system up in some way. If you're looking at other systems like parliamentary systems like England, they keep the judges out of this entirely. They're not happy to do it with parliament. So they have independent boards that are supposed to be meritocratic. There are many ways to do this, but you have to start looking at it. And then you have to recognize, well, is the Israeli court system an aid to or a harm to contract? One of the things that was written in comments to the piece that myself and Max is not my colleague at NYU. He was my wonderful student at NYU, and he's now busy in the world at large. And we write a bunch of stuff together from time to time. We start looking at this. Well, to what extent can people rely on the Israeli system? And what you discover is there's a very strong effort to try and take major commercial arrangements with foreign investors and to export them, that is to put them into arbitrations and panels that are run overseas, because you have some degree where the choice of law is. So the Israeli law is not an assistance to anybody else. It's simply too amorphous. The notion of reasonableness is not meant as a qualification when things go wrong with general rules. It's meant to be the only standard that you have. And as one of the English judges said a very long time ago, the definition of reasonableness that is employed by the Israeli courts varies with the size of the foot of the particular person who is making the decision in question. So what is really needed in Israel is a dialogue.
We have 30 seconds, Richard, 30 seconds. Okay.
And the dialogue has to go more than just worry about this dispute. Israel has to separate the review of lower court decisions from constitutional decisions. It needs an intermediate set of courts like the United States Courts of Appeal. That's what we have to be aiming for, not these endless charges of abuse against Netanyahu and his conservative government.
The article in the Wall Street Journal ends, a similar sentiment found its genesis with Judah ben Tabai in the first century BC. Israelis would do well to heed the rabbi's exhortation when judging, do not act as an advocate. Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.